I'm talking to you today about what's your love quotient like? What's your love quotient like? Most important love day of the entire year is right upon us. And so we're pausing in our series. We have one more part, which we'll look at next week, When You Need a Miracle. And I want to share some thoughts with you from the one who is love. God is love, God himself. I read this week, though, that the very first Valentine's Day was in 496 AD and was thought to have had a beginning at a Roman festival called Lupercalia, a celebration for springtime. However, the festival was outlawed by Pope Gelasius at the time as being too un-Christian, and instead Valentine's Day was set as a day to honor a man given sainthood. And Saint Valentine, or Saint Valentinus, was his name. Much later, it became considered a day of romance and a day of love. You know, most people give cards or flowers or chocolates. Some give those really lovey-dovey cards Valentine's Day. And yet there are other stranger gifts that have come to light from people who want to give something different to someone they love and admire. One person sent a salami bouquet to their Valentine. Can't imagine. One long married husband received a my side, your side set of pillowcases. A very strange thinking company has marketed things to remember those who have passed, including Love Ashes Creation Jewelry. I can't imagine. But anyway. And a down in the mouth company has created a ring that has, instead of diamonds or rubies, 1 to 3 of your own teeth that you give to your Valentine. Can you imagine? Yes, you're going to get sick if I keep going. I wouldn't be impressed with any of those gifts. Love is a significant theme in the Bible. Did you know that? Truly it is. Depending on the translation that you use of the original Greek and Hebrew, you'll find love used from 310 times in the King James Version, if that's what you'd like to read, to 551 times in the NIV. And it goes without saying that God, who inspired the sacred writings of the Word of God, knew that love would be at the top of the list for all of humankind and their needs and their pursuits. Real love often isn't what is seen in society. Children might say, "I love you, Mommy or Daddy," but at times they have ulterior motives. Anybody know what I'm talking about? Go to Walmart. "I love you, Mommy. I love you, Grandpa." And then, of course, they take me to the toy aisle. They might have the gimmies, things like a toy that's attracted their attention. Or they might have the motive of using flattery to get out of punishment or discipline, right? Some people foolishly talk about love when they have nothing more than a sexual attraction for another person. Others think of love as an emotion, when in reality, love is an action or a choice or a promise, things that truly supersedes the words that we give. And so today, let's take a simple look at some of the most profound ways that you and I can express love. Genuine love. Selfless love. I want us to take our Bibles, if you happen to have one with you, and we're going to be looking at 1 Corinthians today. It's the love chapter is what we call it. And I was going to read it from the Message Bible, but I decided to use the NIV because probably more of you would have that. And so I'm going to read it from the NIV. And Paul writes, and he's writing to the Corinthian church, and he says, "Though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I have become sounding brass or a clanging cymbal. And though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith so that I could remove mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned, but have not love," he says, "it profits me nothing. Love suffers long and is kind. Love does not envy. Love does not parade itself. Love is not puffed up. does not behave rudely, does not seek its own, is not provoked, thinks no evil, does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth, bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, and endures all things. Love never fails. But whether there are prophecies, they will fail. Whether there are tongues, they will cease. Whether there is knowledge, it will vanish away. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part. But when that which is perfect has come, then that which is in part will be done away. When I was a child, I spoke as a child. I understood as a child. I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. For now we see in a mirror dimly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then I shall know just as I am also known. And now abide faith, hope, love, these three, but the greatest of these is love. It's an incredible passage of scripture, really, the things that Paul writes about love. And in it, he gives us some truths that I think are important for our everyday living, in our marriages, in our relationships with our family, in our church, things that are very important on a consistent basis. First of all, he tells us that our love should be enriching. Everyone say enriching. Enriching. Paul speaks about some incredible spiritual gifts in this chapter. As a matter of fact, he references five of them. He talks about tongues, something Pentecostals believe in, and they have the purpose of edification, according to 1 Corinthians 14:5 and 13, of encouraging, building up. It's a wonderful gift to use and enjoy, speaking in tongues. And then he refers to prophecy. I've been in places where prophecy has been a tremendous blessing, but I've been in places where it's been a curse, where people have simply used it to prophesy against one another. A lot of people today have been making predictions or giving prophecies about things to come in the world. And most of the time, the things that they prophesy are frightening or negative. If a prophecy is from God, it should be pointing to truth, something that truth is tough for its hearers to handle. Just think about that for a moment. John the Baptist lost his head. He was a prophet in a real sense. And the prophet Isaiah was sawed in two. The prophet Zechariah was stoned, and all three who served as a prophet in the Old Testament had calamities come upon them. Yet the truth that the prophet shares will never contradict the Bible. True prophets never get rich for speaking from God. And as well, true prophets historically are friends of the poor and the powerless. Not the rich, not the powerful. And a true prophet is never motivated by hate, but always speaks from a broken heart. When I was asked to go to Toronto and pastor a church there for a period of time, which I did for 11 years, it was a church that had a radical problem with prophecy, a major problem. It wasn't being handled well. It was a great church. It was the church that had the first full gospel businessmen's group in Canada. It was the church out of which Benny Hinn and his family came and attended. And I was in that church for a period of time as the lead pastor. But I remember upon my going, there were those who made a prophecy before I came that the youth pastor should be the next lead pastor. But it had already been decided by the leaders that I was to come, and so prophecy was used as a dividing thing rather than a uniting thing, and it was wrong. And Paul talks about prophecy here in a very positive way. And then Paul refers to knowledge. When one receives a word of knowledge biblically, they're speaking right into a person's life about things that wouldn't possibly be known in the natural. They'll talk about what God is doing or intends to do in that person's life. They give insight directly from God. And so Paul refers to knowledge. He talks about faith. And this faith is a unique faith in believing for the absolute impossible. I've known people that believe like that, haven't you? Doesn't matter what the situation is in their life. They believe that God can take care of their problem. And it's supernatural faith. And when everything seems to be against the idea, the concept or the suggestion that one gives in faith, that faith can prove to be a winning factor, trusting what you see with eyes of faith rather than with the natural eye. Faith, great thing. We need faith. We need faith to win in everyday life. And then there's the spiritual gift of giving. Some who possess this gift give to needs that have been revealed to them without ever having their attention specifically directed to the need. Or it can refer to one who is so filled with compassion and passion that they give and they give and they give and they give. And I've known people like that. They have this gift of giving. And all five of these spiritual gifts are valuable. All five of them are important. But they're only valuable and important when they enrich the lives of other people. No matter what we say or do, we're directed that love has to be at the center of all of our actions and our communications. And God teaches us to love one another because love enriches all it touches. How many of you have family that you love, and so you give to them and love them and show them that love consistently? How many of you? Family. And that's what it's talking about. We have to have that kind of love operating within us. And so we direct love as the center of our actions and our communications. There's a great story that comes from the miracle on the River Kwai. I'm a war buff, and it's a war story of Scottish soldiers who were forced to labor on a jungle railroad. Some of you probably have seen the story when it was put up in the theater. They'd degenerated as a group of people into barbarous behavior. But one day, something happened. A shovel went missing. And the Japanese officer in charge was absolutely, totally, and completely enraged. He demanded that the missing shovel be produced or else. And when no one in the squadron of prisoners spoke up, the officer got his gun and threatened to kill them all on the spot. Finally, one man stepped forward, and the officer put his gun away, picked up a shovel, and beat the man to death. Well, when the beating was over, the prisoners picked up the mutilated body and carried it to the second tool check. This time, no shovel was missing. There'd been a miscount at the first tool count. And word spread like wildfire. An innocent man had been willing to die for the entire camp and to rescue them. His action had a profound effect, and the men began to treat one another like brothers rather than like enemies who were trying to steal their food. And when the victorious allies finally swept in, the survivors, human skeletons by that time, lined up in front of their captors. And they insisted, no more hatred. No more killing. Now what we need is forgiveness. What a great lesson. And that's love. Love should always be enriching. I'm presently reading a book on scandalous forgiveness. And the author talks about forgiveness and how we need to love one another through the actions of forgiving. Secondly, our love should be edifying. Everyone say edifying. So it's not only enriching, but it's edifying. For something to be edifying, it must be thinking of others and not self. You put yourself in another person's place before you speak about them or in any way act towards them. How would I feel about something that was being said about me and done towards me before I say that thing about someone else? You know, the Corinthian church back in its day was a challenging church. It had its problems. It was called the Spirit-filled church, and yet it had so many problems. In public meetings, the people were impatient with one another. Isn't that something? And not only that, if they were truly loving, they would have put up with what others were saying in patience. And then they envied one another. Paul wrote, but he told us that love would cause them to humbly accept and praise the successes and spiritual gifts that others had when they themselves were living in failure and couldn't see their own spiritual gifts operating well. The Corinthians of the church were famous in the courts because they were always going to court to sue one another. Look at your neighbor and think about what it would be like to take them to court. Your neighbor wouldn't be very impressed, would they? But that's what the Corinthians were doing. I've never been the victim of a lawsuit, but I'm sure it can be debilitating. Paul told them to stop their court actions and to be prepared to humbly accept injustice at times. Revenge really isn't sweet, he told them. Rather than putting another down in court because they've harmed you, Paul said you should forgive and speak positively about them. The reason gossip spreads so much is because we don't do that sometimes. We don't forgive and we don't speak positively about others. To be edifying means to look the other way when offenses come at you, and in return for harm, offer help. To be edifying means that even when gossip has affected how other people see you, we shouldn't speak badly in return. A kind word can both shame the gossiper and can put you on a stature that is above them. And that's why Paul tells us that love never gives up, nor does it fly off the handle. To be edifying also means that we should keep no record of wrongs. Forgiveness means wiping a record clean, never holding things against others. Love should always be edifying. And so it should be enriching. And Paul says it should be edifying. And he gives us one more thing that love should be. Our love should always be enduring. Say enduring. That's an important one too. I've given you two characteristics of biblical love. Love should be enriching and love should be edifying. And in either of these characteristics, if either is missing, it won't be enduring. I've always watched the Olympics and I've watched the people that have endured in the races. You know what I'm talking about? They have to get to the finish line. And no matter how much they're hurt, no matter how much they're sweating, no matter how much they're in pain, they endure until they get to the finish line. There was a young man who was determined one time to win the affection of a lovely gal who wouldn't give him the time of day. You know what I'm talking about? His determination, though, made him somewhat of a pest. He decided to contact her every day, and to do so by letter, even though the postage at the time cost him a fortune. 5 days a week, she received love letters from him. This is from a poor woman that didn't have anything to do with him. When she didn't respond, he increased his output to 3 notes every 24 hours. 15 notes were sent through the mail every single week. In all, he wrote to her more than 700 times. And she wound up marrying the mailman. You see, he wasn't enriching the gal with love, nor was he edifying her. Paul gives the example of 3 spiritual gifts that won't last forever. The first is prophecy, and then there's knowledge, and then there's tongues, and they all have an expiry date. Sometimes I miss expiry dates at home on medicine or some food. Maybe you're like me, and all of a sudden you're eating and thinking, this isn't fresh anymore. And you know why? Because it's past due. Past its expiry date. And Paul says all of these have an expiry date. We won't need prophecy when we're finally in our eternal home with God, for everything will have come to pass by that day. That's a good thought. Nor will special spiritual knowledge be needful when we're in heaven, because we won't need any direction about any circumstances that we're facing and when we're looking for answers. And tongues won't be needed as praise languages when we're with God. 1 Corinthians 14 tells us, anyone who speaks in a tongue does not speak to men, but to God. And we'll be with God, and so we won't need to have tongues at that time. Paul also said in the same chapter that tongues are a sign, not for believers, but for unbelievers. And in heaven, only believers will be in the population. If we have enriching love and edifying love, those qualities should last continually. We should always be edifying those that we're constantly talking to, dealing with, living with, working with. Hatred for the Christian has no place in our hearts. None. Jealousy has no place in our heart. Greed has no place in our hearts. Pride and lust have no place in our hearts. Our love, if it's the love of God that's been placed in our hearts according to Romans 5:5, will never fail. God's love is perfect, and it can endure anything. It can endure pain, fear, criticism, disloyalty, and gossip. That's the kind of love that God places in our hearts. It can overlook contention. It can overlook forgetfulness. Oh, if you forget something important in your spouse's life, they have to forgive you. Isn't that a good thing? I remember one time I forgot my wife's birthday. I was so busy at the church. I was working 60 plus hours a week, and I got home late that evening, and she wasn't talking to me. And I thought, what did I do? What did I say? Where am I wrong? And finally, she looked at me with sort of a sullen look on her face. Did you forget something? Do you remember the date? And finally, it dawned on me. It's your birthday. I'll double it tomorrow. She still wasn't happy. But when we have true love, it can overlook contention, forgetfulness, and loss. Our love should always be enduring. Now, on this Valentine's Day that's about to come, would you take a moment to examine the quality of love for those around you? How do you love them? Is your love for your family, for your spouse, for your coworkers, for your neighbors, is that love enriching? What am I saying? Does it improve or enhance the quality of the relationship you have with them? Does it do that? And do your words and actions and attitudes add value to how you relate to one another? Do they? Or do you say things that seem to be more of a put down? Things that cut to the heart. Things that cause their mind to wonder if your love is real. Secondly, is your love really edifying? Do you speak well of others? Or are you often critical, nitpicking, and downplaying their accomplishments? When you finish a conversation with those you say you love, do they feel better or worse? And is your love enduring? Does your love last through the storms that you face together with others? Does it last? I remember when my wife was going through cancer, and she was praying a lot. And I would enter into the love relationship with her to pray with her. And we would hold hands. Sometimes we would kneel. Sometimes we'd weep. Sometimes we'd go on prayer walks. But we walked through it together. You see, it wasn't just her storm. It was our storm. It was something that we needed to hold to one another with and say that this isn't your battle alone. This is my battle. And together, we're going to face it. I honestly believe, though she was only given 6 months and she went 2.5 years, it was because there was love and there was a God that was hearing our prayer to prolong her life as long as he did. And husbands and wives, do you love each other as you did when you first began your journey together? Oh, there's a hard question, isn't there? Sometimes the decisions that we make at an altar when we pledge our troths to one another are forgotten on the first week of marriage. So we have to make sure on a continuous basis that our love endures even in the tough times. And then one more question. Is your love for God enduring, edifying, and enriching? If you happen to be listening to me today online or even here in the auditorium, but you haven't yet invited Christ into your life, I want you to know that God's love will always be enriching. Always. Always. And I want you to know that he'll help you through the storms that you'll face. He'll bring good people your way Why? Because his love is enriching. And it's always edifying. It'll pick you up. It'll make your days seem brighter when you think about the love of God. You see, God doesn't spend his time searching for your failures or your flaws. That's not his business. He's not looking for ways to put you down. He loves you as his child, and he'll be there for you if you give him the opportunity simply to enter your heart and to enter your life. And of course, his love will endure. He wants to love you not only in the here and now, but all through eternity, to be with him and to demonstrate how valuable he sees you. I love the passage of scripture in John chapter 14, verses 1 to 6. We read it this past week at a funeral for Geraldine. Let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God. Then Jesus says, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions or rooms. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go, I will come again to receive you to myself, that where I am, there you may be also. Can you catch the commitment, the enduring nature of the love of God for us? He's promised us a place that will go on forever and ever and ever. Not like this earth, but one that is perfect and one that he will rule and reign and where we'll be with him for all eternity. Would you stand with me? I'll invite the worship team to come back. I recognize that sometimes there are people, particularly around Valentine's Day, who don't feel loved, who struggle. They feel very much unloved. Maybe they don't have a Valentine, but it goes beyond that. Maybe the words that they heard at home as a child were always put downs. You'll never amount to anything. You're no good, that kind of thing. Maybe the workplace is not the kind of workplace that builds them up and makes them feel that they're beneficial to the company. It could be that even in a marriage where you are, you don't feel loved because there's no lovingness expressed on a continuous basis. And today, if you struggle in any way, shape, or form with feeling love, or it's a lost love, that love has gone from your life in some way, I just want to give you an opportunity to come today. We're going to pray with you because the love of God is shed abroad in the hearts of all believers. And so we're here today to be able to pray for you and say, God, help this person to feel your love and to know your love, that you love them so much that you would have died on the cross had it been just them that was needing salvation. So today, if you need God and you need his love, and you need his touch in your life. Maybe you are lacking the love quotient that you need for others. You just come. We're not going to be long at the altar today, but we're going to take a bit of time to pray. I'll ask Glenn to come, and he'll join me here. And we're going to pray for you if you need us to pray that either your love quotient would increase or that you would feel the love of God in a greater way or that he would heal you in any kind of broken relationship. You come as the song is sung today.